This is April 11th, and this is the Bruins Beat, presented by FanDuel on CLNS Media. Welcome to the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. My name is Evan Marinofsky. Hope you guys are having a great day, a great week. And we are less than a week away from the start of the NHL playoffs, which means the Bruins Cup pursuit, the one we've been waiting for all season long, will begin next week. And before we dive into the first round matchups, and we did potential playoff matchups on Poke the Bear last week, this episode, Connor Ryan and I dove into the biggest questions surrounding the Bruins entering the playoffs. Obviously, they are nasty. They are the best team in the league by far, but there's still a lot of questions. Some of them big, some of them small. Every team, by the way, has questions, but we dove into the ones that could impact the Bruins the most and could mean the most. And we get into stuff from the goaltending to potential matchups to the power play. We got into everything in this episode. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Connor Ryan. And we're here with Connor Ryan, presented by FanDuel. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. It is getting to be that time of the year that we love. It is early to mid-April where the weather starts to get nice and the marathon's coming. And the best part
Butter
of it all...
Butter Pecan is coming back to Duncan. That's what you were going to say, right?
Well, this is just where I was going. You took the words right out of my mouth. Right out. So, but that's okay. I'll let you have the butter pecan from Dunks. I know you were excited. Charlie Coyle was holding the Dunks iced coffee in that Bleacher Report. In the Bleacher Report graphic they put up when the Bruins hit 63 wins on Sunday. I just love the home. And they also loved how they had Matt Grzelcyk riding the Zamboni. That's a pretty good homage.
That was actually pretty good. I also like that David Pastrnak didn't look like a oil prospector antagonist from like a 1910 film anymore. There was that one graphic they had where he looked like Jonathan Frakes. It was very odd.
Yes, a court drawing. We're glad he didn't look like a court drawing. But exciting stuff. But the biggest thing of this time of year, not just butter pecan from Dunks, but the Bruins playoffs are in a week. We don't know the start date yet. I know there was some confusion because Jim Montgomery in a quote said April 17th. That's when the playoffs start as a whole. It could start Marathon Monday, but it also could be Tuesday. We'll kind of get more information on that throughout this week. But one thing we do know is the Bruins will go in as the favorite. There's no doubt in anyone's mind they will go in as the favorite. That doesn't mean, though, Connor, that there aren't questions. There are lots of questions still surrounding this Bruins team. And we have, I would say, six, maybe seven big questions that are going to kind of face the Bruins and face them throughout the entirety of the playoffs. And we'll start here because I think this is one that people still are asking. I think their success this season has overrided it a little bit, but I still think it's kind of in the back of people's minds. There's been a lot of heartbreak from the Bruins in the playoffs the last, I'd say, 10 years. You go back to 2013, Stanley Cup, 2014. That team was a wagon. They're obviously not on the same track as this team. They're not as big of a wagon as this team, but they were a wagon, bounced in the second round. 15, 16, 17 were pretty irrelevant years. Then you get to, 18, 19, they lose the cup. 20, their President's Trophy, they lose in the bubble. 21, they lose to the Islanders for some reason in the second round. And then last year, they're bounced in the first round to the Hurricanes. So they have not been the most reliable playoff team of recent years. How much should people be worried about that? And does that apply to this team? That's the question everyone's asking.
Yeah, I think Bruins fans are well within their rights to, I think, view most things with a bit of pessimism, I guess. As you said, you map out their history, and yeah, there's a lot that has gone wrong for this team. So it almost feels like, beyond the fact that we've had multiple times this year, people have added in the comment of, well, they got to win the cup, make the season worth it, which Yes, we are very much aware of that. But I think even the most rational Bruins fan just has that gut feeling of like waiting for the other shoe to drop. So far, it hasn't been the case. But it's also something where I think you look at this Bruins team and how they've been able to fight through adversity. And you look at a team that is so far ahead of everyone else in the standings. Yes, maybe they haven't had to scrap for a final playoff spot or what have you. But I think you look at the number of third period comebacks this team has had, the injuries early on this year. I think people even kind of overlooked that. They've just, you know, taken in the last 2-3 months of just how great this team has been. But I think all of us, even, you know, you and I, Evan, when we were looking at this team back in the fall, we had high expectations of this team. I think we both had them winning the cup, but this was also a team that we were all like, yeah, they're gonna get hot, get healthy and go on a run. But like, I'm going to say they're 2 games over .500 at the end of November, right? Like, we pretty much mapped that out for them to fight through that kind of adversity, to have so many guys contribute. Again, I think you look at the way this team's going right now, it either has to be injuries or just a, you know, severe mismatch in terms of a fast forechecking team like Carolina or like a grind out team like the Islanders or something like that. It has to be just a way a certain team matches up and neutralizes the Bruins, as opposed to, I think there's this overriding flaw that is going to be the main reason why this kind of miraculous season is going to get derailed.
It's hard not to think about past years, because it's, you know, obviously it's a new coach, new goalies. It's, you know, obviously last year they had Swayman and Ullmark, but, you know, from 19 and the years before, new goalie. Like, you have a lot of new players. You still have, you know, the same core. But the reason I'm not overly concerned with past years, obviously we're all thinking about it, but one of the reasons is, and this is a reason, this is an answer to future questions that we'll ask as well, is depth. They have the depth, right? You think about any situation, a defenseman goes down, you have guys who can fill in. If Ullmark isn't playing well, which we'll get to in a second, you have Jeremy Swayman. Up front, you know, we'll get to David Krejci in a bit. Krejci goes down. You know, Pavel's not, like, you have a lot of backup options that are not backups. They are, for a lot of teams, they would be legitimate things. So to me, it's depth. They have depth that they didn't have in past years. And there's a morale around this team that they also, you know, that's even been elevated even more. So I think the depth is the biggest piece, because the East is ridiculously hard. This is not,
yes,
like, this is not an easy path. This is not shaping up to be 2019, at least yet. You know, obviously we didn't know going into 2019 playoffs that the Lightning would be swept in the first round. Hopefully it's not the Bruins. But the road is not easy. This is not like, oh, it's going to be a cakewalk through the East. It's not like the Bruins are out West. There's a lot of hard teams there, but again, they're built with depth, which again leads me to my next question. We've talked about this all year in the goaltending category, but Linus Ullmark has never played this much. Doesn't play a lot of games in a row. And the typical thing, as everyone knows, for the playoffs is you play every game if you're the goalie. You don't switch off. And that seems to be the thing here. And the question is, can Linus Ullmark carry the Bruins through the playoffs? Will they need Swayman at all? So I think, can Ullmark carry this team?
Well, I think you just look at his body of work this year, and I think this is something we've touched on multiple times. As you said, I think before this season, his previous career high for starts was, I think, 41. I think that was last year. So if we were in a point during this regular season where Ullmark, you know, hit a lull of like 3-4 poor games in a row and was really kind of falling off and needed some time to rest and recuperate, which would have been expected for, again, a guy that hasn't had that many reps before, and for a sport that, or a position that's so tough to maintain that consistency like goaltending over the long season. If he hit that stretch, wouldn't be surprising, but it would be something to keep in the back of your mind. But where has it really been one of those stretches, right? The only like thing that has really impacted the Bruins goalie rotation has just been Swayman also playing at a very high level as well. It's not like they've been trading or Swayman has stepped up when Ullmark's taken a step back. So I think when you look at it, it is one of those main things I think people are still talking about, is whether or not they keep a goalie rotation for the playoffs, which if there's any team that can probably pull it off, it's this team, considering just about everything has gone right. But I still think when you look at, you know, how Ullmark has played all season long, really hasn't taken a step back and has, you know, pretty much established himself as that Vezina front runner. You know, Jim Montgomery, I think, always talks about, you know, instilling confidence in players and keeping them focused on the task at hand. I think for, you know, Ullmark, in terms of getting that that starting spot and staying in that. I think that's kind of the best way you can echo that confidence and keeping him locked into the moment. And if things go south, if, you know, it's a situation kind of like a few years ago with the Penguins, where they open the year with Fleury in the playoffs, doesn't work out, and all of a sudden they switch things around, right? Then maybe that's how Swayman gets back into it. But I think right now you look at just how good he's been all year long. I don't think you've seen anything that can disprove that Ullmark is the guy once you get to the playoffs and that grind really starts ramping up.
Yeah, there just hasn't been any faults in his game this year. He's been too good to think that he would just completely shrivel down in the playoffs. And I think that's one of the biggest things with him. I mean, I just like, you know, he's the front running Vezina candidate. I don't know, like, you know, yeah, could he falter? Yeah, of course. But as I said, there's Swayman there to pick things up if that's the case. But again, Ullmark has had just such a terrific season, and I don't really see that changing in the playoffs. I don't see the Bruins losing because of it. But as we said all throughout the year, that's the one area that is playoff untested. That is not, you know, that is, you know, Patrice Bergeron and, you know, the forward core is going to show up in the playoffs. You know, defensively, McAvoy has been through long runs, and Grizzlick and Carlo and those guys. Now, Ullmark has not, and neither is Swayman. Last year was just one round. So, but again, I still think there's a reason to be confident in that. Third question, and this is one we touched on Poke the Bear on Saturday. Will Brad Marchand find his game? Jim Montgomery talked a lot about over the past week. You know, he's been more focused on setting other guys up. He's still been producing. He still had the assists. I know the goalless drought has been, unfortunate and something that, you know, we talked about. But do you think Brad Marchand finds his game in the playoffs? Because I got to be honest, Connor, it's hard to bet against a guy like Marchand. It's hard to think that he is not going to show up. It is, you know, he's a big playoff performer, and my guess is he finds his game in some form or fashion in the playoffs. And I think the depth helps them in that regard as well.
Yeah. It's a testament to, I think, a guy like Marchand that, you know, for a guy who's coming off that kind of surgery to even, you know, still be a guy that's, what's he on pace for, over 60 points, still a guy that outside of just like that scoring, which has dried up a bit, he's still someone that is great on the penalty kill, is great in all situations, is a bit of a spark plug out there. So he still brings value if he's not scoring. That being said, you like to see just more of that production. I think that game on Saturday against the Devils was a step in the right direction. I mean, he had what? I think it was 5 or 6 shots on goal, was really aggressive. It was a little bit more of a shot-first mentality. And again, I think when he's at his best, especially this year, it's when he is setting up guys. But I think you do hit a point where you have to be a little bit more assertive with the puck. There's been plenty of other pass first guys who have had a stretch where they kind of take a more forward approach, a more, you know, shot heavy approach. We got a guy like Charlie Coyle. You know, there's been times this year where I think he's, you know, probably most comfortable setting up teammates and possessing the puck. But you see during these little stretches of the year where he's kind of seen his offensive game grow a good amount. It's been him kind of taking that initiative and getting more pucks on net. So Marchand, the eye test really hasn't been there this year. That's something that I think he's kind of been very upfront and candid about in terms of not being fully recovered from that hip surgery, which, given the severity of it, is not much of a surprise. But he is still someone that can impact the game beyond the score sheet. And I think you look at just how he's played these last couple of games, he's probably one of the few guys that isn't just kind of coasting through these final games of the season. He seems like he's really trying to work out his game, you know, get another goal or two. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he plays these last two games because, well, it's just getting more power play reps and just, you know, firing pucks on net. I think he just needs that one power play goal, that one chance to go his way to try to just get that monkey off your back and get that confidence building for the playoffs. He's a guy that I think, you know, builds off of his confidence, and he's usually in no short supply of confidence when he's out there. So I think for him, it's all about kind of just getting back on that score sheet and getting back to his game, which I think he's shown that over these last couple of regular season matchups.
Yeah, I'm not overly worried about Marchand in that sense. And again, I think it just goes back to, you know, and you mentioned it a little bit there, and I mentioned it earlier, depth matters. Like, even if that first line is shut down in some form or fashion, you have the second line that's a scoring threat. You have the third line that's a scoring threat. And to me, it just goes back to you have those other options. And again, Marchand is just, we know what Marchand is. Obviously, the 2019 Cup final, you know, is an outlier. But, you know, the rest of the time as a playoff performer, he's a legitimate piece. Before we dive into Bruins stuff, Connor, Quinnipiac. Quinnipiac wins the national championship. 2 out of 3 from New England in the last 3 national championships. So impressive stuff. Hell of an ending to that game. My goodness.
Unbelievable.
Incredible. 10 seconds in, set playoff a faceoff. That's, you know what? Look, I'm biased because of UMass and the way that they've built up their program and seeing them win in 2021. I always love to see a program that's, you know, not as prominent take away a win. And it was cool to see that on Saturday night. I know it's an older team. I know people are always like, I retweeted Mark Divers' good tweet about how, you know, Quinnipiac doesn't have the big TV deals that Minnesota does and this and that. And like all the replies were like, well, they're so much older. And it's like, you know, like so are most college hockey teams.
Like, also, that's what most teams are. Like that's how many teams are actually anchored by like a crew of younger players? It's I almost think like the best recipe is either like a team built entirely or, you know, primarily out of older players, seniors and juniors, or it's got to be a mix still very heavy on upperclassmen with like, you need to be like the 2003 Syracuse team of like a good team and a young freshman like Carmelo Anthony that puts you over the top, right? Like yes. You can't just win off of just
even BU this year. I know you get to the Frozen Four. Like to me, that was a perfect blend of, you know,
ton of seniors, ton of upperclassmen, and then a guy like Hudson who like helps put you over the top. That's like what the formula is like.
Yes, that's the formula. And at UMass in 2021, they were a team full of, you know, really good upperclassmen seniors, and they were still missing guys like Cale Makar and Mario Ferraro, but they also had some good younger talent. It was infused together, good goaltending. They won the whole thing. So again, I think that's the recipe. I know the Big Ten now, that's 2 straight years where they've had these really
super teams.
You know, super teams, prospect heavy teams like Minnesota and Michigan. And, you know, they get to the Frozen Four, but they just come up a little bit short. Really good teams. Really good teams, and they've had some good seniors, but it's just not to the level of teams like Quinnipiac or UMass a few years ago. So it's good to see a new team kind of take hold of the college hockey world. So props to them for that.
Shout out the Bobcats.
Shout out the Bobcats. Good to see. Connecticut, by the way, state of Connecticut. What a month. UConn, and now this, Quinnipiac. So, wow.
Merritt Parkway still sucks, but, you know, hat tip to Connecticut.
We'll give them this. We'll give them this. Yes, here you go. Here you go. Moving right along. Fourth question. The power play. We have done a lot on the power play this year. I think everybody has. And it's the big thing. You know, will the power play show up? How much of a difference will it make come the postseason? I do think power plays matter. I know we mentioned 2011 all the time. Games changed a little bit. You do want to gain those. You do want to kind of get advantages wherever you can, just like how we talk about getting the advantage when you match lines. You would like to capitalize on a power play every now and again. And I go back to, they have the personnel. It's not like they're missing guys. You know, it's like, oh man, you know, if only they had Pastrnak, or if only they had someone like, Marchand or DeBrusk in front of that. They have all of that. It just comes down to making the pieces fit together. The question is, will they fit together in the postseason?
Yeah, it's something that's almost kind of tough to gauge because you're at the point of the season where you're sitting guys out, so you're not getting a full complement of these players. I think the Bruins are probably encouraged by how the power plays looked the last couple of weeks, especially that second unit, which that'll be an interesting discussion once we get to the actual playoffs in terms of like how much they're allocating those minutes, because usually it's the second power play unit's getting what, 30 seconds at most of sustained power play time during these opportunities. So we've seen a lot of good stuff from them. I think having Taylor Hall back and where he kind of fits into that equation does help out quite a bit, because I think you look at a lot has not really gone right for the power play, but I think one issue that keeps on popping up is struggling to gain the blue line, get clean entries. And I think having a guy like Hall out there who can kind of be a cheat code in terms of just how good he is through the neutral zone, how good he is at setting those entries up, that will help out a great deal. But I think you're at the point now where, you know, Montgomery, I think, kind of discussed this over the weekend, that you almost still have to have faith in these guys that have been out there. It's not like this is an overhauled unit. It's still the same cast of characters of, you know, Bergeron and Pastrnak and Marchand and those guys that you hope it just breaks through and they execute in crunch time. But I would not be surprised if they continue to tinker with that a little bit, because whether it's Lindholm up top or, you know, Hall at the net front on the first power play unit or what have you, there still needs to be some things that I think tighten up some of those areas. Because I think you're seeing it, even though it's been an extended stretch, it's been two or three just the same things over and over again that keeps on plaguing them, whether it's indecisiveness with moving the puck, entries, things like that. So it is something worth monitoring, because I think Montgomery isn't necessarily fretting over, you know, the personnel he has out there, but it's one thing to have the team in place, another to have it be executed at a high clip once you get to the playoffs.
It's also tough because it's hard to just find your game like that in the playoffs. You know, you're facing a team that you're facing, you know, 4 to 7 times. They have done extensive video work on you. Nobody's bad. You're not just exposing it. You're not playing, you know, the Montreal Canadiens. You're playing a good team. You're playing them 4 to 7 times. And as I said, they've done a lot of game planning, and they can find those little areas that they can exploit on the power play to kind of, you know, shut it off. So it's going to be difficult for them to kind of find it. I know I mentioned they have the guys there. They do. But as you said, it not an easy thing to find this time of year, which will be kind of a difficult thing for them to do. Speaking of another thing that is not, it's kind of up in the air, the health of David Krejci. Didn't play this weekend, has been in and out of the lineup for the past couple weeks, it feels like. This is where I go to depth as well, because, you know, having Krejci is the main thing. You want to have David Krejci, you want him healthy, you want him playing between Zacha and Pasternak. I don't think it's a terrible thing, though, if you had to keep Bertuzzi, Zacha, and Pasternak, if Krejci can't get back, because that line's been terrific. And Bertuzzi is a guy, by the way, that I think you and I are going to do a lot on once the season's over. Of, hey, how do you keep this guy? Like, how do you make this thing work? Because he's not too bad. But how big is it? And where do you think Krejci stands right now, health wise?
Yeah, I think you look at the way the Bruins are approaching, it seems like they're just, you know, intent on giving him the rest of this week off, which makes sense. And last time Montgomery gave an update, said that whatever Krejci's dealing with, he still has a lot of soreness, so lower body injury. They're going to give him, I think, all the time he needs. And again, I think when this team is at its best, it's when you have Krejci down the middle and you have these really talented guys like a Bertuzzi further down the lineup. But I think, as you said, is it like a thing that's going to decide this playoff run if Krejci's not 100%? No. Again, none of these guys are at 100% right now, even if, you know, they're no longer on the injury report. All these guys are nursing something. We'll find out all that stuff once this run finally ends. We have breakup day. But I think you look at just the way that this team is set up. At the very least, the Bruins have options. It's the same with, like, Ullmark and Swayman. Like, if Ullmark is at a high level, you're at your best. But if things go south, and a lot can go south during a playoff run, whether it's Swayman being the backup there, or if it's Zacha, who's stepped in and been very, very good at the 2C spot, when Bertuzzi's also been up there, the Bruins at least have options out there. And that's a testament to, I think, the way this team is built, that compared to a few years ago, if, like, you know, Ullmark, you know, if your Vezina Trophy winner wasn't playing at a high level, kind of up the creek. If David Krejci is banged up and not playing at a high level, you don't really have a lot of centers to turn to. And, you know, the Bruins, almost like they've looked at their past postseason failures and have found various contingency plans to avoid those situations. So, of course, you want David Krejci healthy and good to go, but the Bruins, at the very least, have other manners to keep driving play in that top six spot.
I mean, you just look at even last year, right? Holla gets hurt as a second line center. Who do you turn to?
Yeah.
Like, what is there? And you look at, you know, past years, you know, Rask gets hurt. You're going to Halak, who, you know, nice backup during the season, reliable, good to split time with. But I don't think anyone ever was, you know, oh, Halak is, you know, you can still win a cup with Halak. You know, I think things have changed a lot on that front. As you said, it's like they analyzed it. They went back and said, what's hurting us? What's plaguing us? And they changed those things. They got backup plans for them, which is not a bad idea. Good idea to do. Some other teams should definitely think about doing that. Because I think it's worked out well for the Bruins this year so far. The final question, this is the big question. This is the question everyone is wondering, even more so than the history, which is why it's our last on our list. We made you listen all the way to get to this point. Who is beating the Bruins 4 times in 7 games? Who is the team going to be, if there is one? Because as I look at the East, it's very tough, right? The Maple Leafs present their challenges. The Lightning do as well. Then you get to the conference final, and you have the Hurricanes or the Rangers or the Devils. Devils getting Luke Hughes now, by the way, which is a huge addition to that back end. I think he's going to be a guy who comes in, and I hate to do this, Connor, has a Cale Makar-like effect, you know, who comes in and can immediately play and jump in and have an impact. But the Bruins have been so good that they really haven't even had a big slump this year, and they've been good. And I don't feel like there's any team that can beat them four times in seven. Is there any team that you, I don't want to say could see, because there's many teams I could see. I mean, it could happen. But is there any team that, who's the biggest threat? We'll go with that. Who's the biggest threat?
I mean, I think the one that always sticks up to me is just Carolina, just based on the way they play and the forechecking pressure they present. That's a team that has had their number for a couple of years now. And still, I think when they're playing at their best, Carolina, they give problems to any team, even a team as poised as the Bruins. So that one, I think, stands at the forefront. If you look at like just the way a team is built, I think when it's what we talked about before. It's teams that can excel at countering opponents with high-end skill off of just boring low-event hockey and a great goaltender that can steal a series, right? I think that's what it comes down to. So whether it's, Tampa's not maybe the Tampa of years past, but Vasilevskiy's still playing at a high level. That's why I think we say ideally the Bruins avoid the Islanders. I think the Bruins should win that series, but Sorokin can go out there and have a 42-save victory in game two at the Garden. Everyone's all of a sudden like, oh, okay. Like, that's just what a guy like Sorokin can do over the span of a series. You look at a team like Dallas that plays heavy and has a guy like Jake Ottinger who can steal you a couple of games. Like, I think those are the kind of teams that you have to watch out for. The only other one that would stand out to me, and this is getting very far down the line, but like, if you play the Oilers and just McDavid goes sicko mode, like, that team has a lot of flaws in its roster, but if it takes a 20-point series from McDavid to do it, like, that could be one where it's just, it'd be brutal timing for the Bruins to just be on the opposite, the receiving end of just like an all-time performance. But there's a team that can do it. It's probably the team anchored by the best player since Gretzky, a guy who's put up 150 points this year. So it's almost like you run through it, and it's a testament to just how tough it is to win the cup and map these things out, because we're talking about arguably the best team assembled in the Bruins based on just how they played this year. And there's multiple ways that they can still lose. Like, they should be favorite, but whether it's a team like the Oilers or Hurricanes or a drag out team like the Islanders, every team they face is going to present a hurdle for this team. And again, they've kind of answered every test that has come their way, but it's going to be a grind. It always is.
Or even Vegas. Like,
yeah.
You have your former coach who's there, who knows the weaknesses of this team and can, figure, obviously the team plays a little bit differently this year, but he knows the tendencies. He knows how to shut this team down. So that's another one. And you look at, one other team is the Rangers. The Rangers on paper, you can make an argument, are the best team on paper, at least just name recognition. I know Patrick Kane's had a bad year and Tarasenko is very wishy-washy, but like name recognition, you can make an argument that they are the best team. I'm not saying they are, but you make an argument for it. You also have Shesterkin in that. And so you have good promising young blue liners too. So that's another team. And that's why, again, I say like the East is not easy. We're not saying the Bruins are favorites because the road is easy. We're saying it because the Bruins are just so damn good. But you're right. I mean, if you play the Islanders in round one, the Rangers or the Devils in round two, or excuse me, the Maple Leafs or the Lightning in round two, or the Devils, Hurricanes, Rangers in round three, like, that's a wicked hard road to the cup. But again, this team's built to do it. We think this team is built to do it. And I think everyone knows where we both stand on whether or not we think the Bruins will win the cup. I think everyone knows we're sticking with those preseason predictions. We're not jumping off that now. No way. Connor, what can people look forward to from you over at boston.com and the Boston Globe?
Yeah, we're going to have you covered every step of the way. We're getting to the point now where we're working on a few, season look backs at some of the top moments of the regular season. There's been no shortage of those. So we're working on quite a few projects about that. Yes, quite a few. breaking down Pasternak's 60 goal season. It's almost been lost in the shuffle of Pasternak just casually adding 60 goals.
I was thinking,
God,
actually,
they signed him.
I was thinking, by the way, as we were talking at the end there, the last question, I was like, I don't think we've mentioned David Pasternak's name once in this whole show, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, 60 goals. Pretty
not
good.
A lot of questions surrounding
pretty
him.
Good. Thank goodness the Bruins signed him to that contract, because imagine if they just still waited and he just went on this heater, especially to end the year.
Yes.
Not bad for a guy that's known for his turnovers.
The only he stopped turning the puck over, Connor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Terrible signing. Ew, awful.
But we'll break that down. Break down, obviously, first-round matchups once we get a better picture of that. And then every step away this cup run, we're going to have you covered with game stories, features, columns, breakdowns, all that good stuff over at Boston.com. So please read over there. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConorRyan_93.
Go do all that and subscribe to New England Hockey Journal. Lots coming up there. Tournaments, showcases, look backs at the prep and the high school season, college stuff. So lots going on over there as well. And that's this week's Bruins Beat. I'm Evan Marinofsky, Bruins Beat listeners. Have a great rest of your week.